So it has been a while since we've met on Sunday night, since before VBS, so however long ago that was. We've had several things going on since then, so happy to pick up back where we were. So we left off in Deuteronomy chapter 30 last time. We finished, that's Moses' third message to the people of Israel before they enter into the promised land. So it's really his last message to them, his last sermon, you could say, to them as they enter, and again, encouraging them to remain faithful to the Lord as they enter. So there's where we are. There's kind of the structure of the book. There are three messages, the bulk of the book through chapter 30, and then the last four chapters, 31 through 34, are mostly about Moses' death and Moses' song. But we've reached that. We've reached this time where we are in this last part of Moses' message. Just a second here. So this is where we are. Tonight we'll move on to that. So included in this last section, though, is a commissioning of Joshua to take over for Moses as the leader of Israel. And secondly, Moses has some instructions for the people of Israel as they come to this time. And then there's also a blessing that Moses has on the people. But all of this fits into these last four chapters of the book of Deuteronomy. And tonight we're going to be starting Deuteronomy 31, so we'll be starting this section. And if you have an ESV Bible, like most of us, like we mostly use in this church, and we'll have it up on the screen, but it divides this chapter into three main parts, and then it starts a fourth part. So the first eight verses, the ESV has the heading Joshua to succeed Moses, and then verses 9 through 13, the reading of the law, and then Joshua commissioned to lead Moses from 14 to 29, and then starts the Song of Moses section in verse 30, and going all the way through, almost all the way through through chapter 32. So I had originally planned to cover the first two parts, so through verse 13, which would be Joshua to succeed Moses in the reading of the law. But the reason I didn't, went back to just covering the first part, was I was so convinced by the Jewish scholar Tigay on the structure of this book, of this chapter, that I went back to just take the first eight verses tonight, and I'll explain that structure next time and why we made that switch. A few years ago, it's been a lot of years ago now as I think about it. It's been a lot of years ago now. I was playing in a golf tournament with a guy that I knew. I guess I wasn't playing with him. I was probably playing against him. But we were on the practice green before the round. And when you play in a golf tournament, you need to mark your golf ball a specific way so that you can identify it. And I was playing, and I noticed that this guy named Mark Amundsen, who I was likely going to be playing with, had his golf ball marked this way. This is how he identified his golf ball. Joshua 1:9. He had Joshua 1:9 written on his golf ball. And he was, practiced with three balls. It said Joshua 1:9 on all three balls. So I walked up to him and I said, "Be strong and courageous." And he kind of looked surprised at me and said, "Oh, you know that one too?" I said, "Yes, I know that one. I know that one too." So Joshua 1:9, be strong and courageous. So why do I bring that story up? Because of be strong and courageous. Well, that's essentially the command that Moses gives to the people of Israel here in Deuteronomy 31. Here it is. Here's verse 6. Be strong and courageous. Do not fear or be in dread of them. For it is the Lord your God who goes with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. So be strong and courageous, for it is the Lord your God who goes with you. That's essentially what tonight is about. Moses is instructing the people of Israel to be strong and courageous. So that's just how we'll go with that heading tonight, be strong and courageous. There are some intervening words in verse 6, but be strong and courageous, for it is the Lord your God who goes with you. So we'll divide these eight verses into two parts. The first six verses will go together. That's Moses' command to Israel, and then he gives a command to Joshua, which is very, very similar. So like usual, we'll start by reading through this. We'll just do the first six verses to start with, and then we'll come back and go through them verse by verse, and then later we'll do the same thing with verses 7 and 8. So if you have your Bibles, Deuteronomy 31, it should say, verses 1 through 8. So Moses continued to speak these words to all Israel, and he said to them, I'm 120 years old today. I am no longer able to go out and come in. The Lord has said to me, you shall not go over this Jordan. The Lord your God himself will go over before you. He will destroy these nations before you so that you shall dispossess them. And Joshua will go over as your head, as the Lord has spoken. And the Lord will do to them as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and to their land when he destroyed them. And the Lord will give them over to you, and you shall do to them according to the whole commandment that I have commanded you. Be strong and courageous. Do not fear or be in dread of them, for it is the Lord your God who goes with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. So we'll go now into, we're going to look at this verse by verse and go through this command that Moses gives to Israel. I'll start it off this way. So Moses continued to speak these words to all Israel, and he said to them. So that first verse, I mentioned T. Gay earlier. He points out that this idiom, these things or these words, refer to what came before it. So when it says Moses said these things, it's talking about the things that were before it. So that's back to his last message. So Moses continued to speak these words or these things to Israel. And then this new part starts in verse 2 then. And, so in addition, he said to them, in addition to what he had said already, he said this to them. So this starts this section of Moses' final instructions to the people of Israel. And here's what he says. I am 120 years old today. I am no longer able to go out and come in. So Moses is announcing to the people that this is the end of his time as leader of Israel. And notice this isn't just a narrative of the events. It doesn't say, for example, now Moses was 120 years old and he could no longer go out and come in. No, Moses is announcing this to the people. He's letting them know this. He's saying, I am 120 years old. He understood that it was his responsibility as the leader of Israel to prepare the people to go into the promised land. And he had been preparing them for quite a while. He'd been with them for 40 years, as you know. He'd been speaking to them, preparing them as they were right on the edge of the promised land, preparing to go in these messages that he had for them. So he's been telling them these things for a while. And now this is, it's imminent. He's saying, he'd already told them before, I'm not going in the promised land with you. They knew that. So now as they prepare to go, he is closing out his time. His departure is imminent. It's right at the door. The time has come for him to leave. And really, if you think about it, this is much like what Jesus did with his disciples at the Last Supper, where he said, you know, I'm going away, but I'm going to send another helper to you. And Moses is doing the same kind of thing here. But this is going to be a hard change. Change is hard. Any change is hard. But a change in leadership can be really hard. But there comes a time when all of us, when we are no longer able to continue, for one reason or another, our bodies fail, our minds fail. And what for Moses, that time was 120. He was 120 years old. And what he said he was no longer able to do was to go out and to come in. So what does that mean? Well, that's actually a specific term. It's a technical term. It's an idiom that means this: to lead troops out to battle and to lead them back home. That's what it means. Now, in the case of Moses here, it probably refers to his whole leadership, but that's what it means. When you see that, I'm not able to go out and to come in. I'm not able to take you out to battle again. I'm not able to bring you back. He's no longer able to do that, especially at this phase of Israel where they're going across to fight these nations that are in the promised land. So Israel is really at a critical stage for a couple of reasons. One, because the guy that's been leading them for 40 years is no longer going to be leading them. And secondly, because they're going to be going into this promised land and they're going to take possession of it. It's a different phase than wandering around in the wilderness. But 40 years Moses had been leading his people from the time that they came out of Egypt. Actually, even right before they came out of Egypt, he was the de facto leader of the people of Israel, and he'd led them for 40 years now. And most of them, because those that were over 20 when they came out of Egypt had all died, most of them, this was the only person that they had ever known as the leader of this people. Can't get away from this. It reminds me a little bit of our church right now. Not quite 40 years, but Randy's been here for 36. And most of the people in this church, that's the only person that they've known. By far the majority of the people in this church, that's the only person that they've known as the leader of this church. It's pretty amazing that most of us have never known the leader of this church, another leader of this church, another leader of this people. But whether we like it or not, and I don't, and whether we not want to admit it or not, there will come a time when that's going to happen. Randy, as you know, has announced when that will be, and he won't be there, and I'm not looking forward to that. And it's a big deal. A change like that is a big thing. It's a hard thing. any change in leadership is hard. But really, we all have to face that same truth sometime. Not only about our church, but about ourselves. A time is coming for all of us when we will no longer be able to go out and come in, our own version of whatever that is, when we're no longer able to fight the battles that the Lord has put us here to fight, when we're no longer able to do the work that God has assigned us to do. And for whatever reason, that day will come for all of us. For Moses, it was when he was 120 years old, and most of us won't make it that long. Who knows why, but God let Moses live to be 120 and to lead those people for 40 years. His life breaks down nicely into three parts. First 40 years in Egypt, next 40 in being a shepherd, learning how to be a leader, and then the last 40 leading the people of Israel. Two or three years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, time flies when you're this age. I mentioned this, and I've said it to several people. There's more difference between 50 and 60 years old than there is between 25 and 50. There's a big difference between 50 and 60, and I'm guessing between 60 and 70. There was an article this week, and I've read a few articles about aging recently in the last couple of years, but the one that I read this week said that at one specific age, I think the last one I read, there are two specific ages when this happens, but at one specific age, your aging accelerates. You start aging a lot faster. At 50 years old, plus or minus 5 years, you start to age much more rapidly. And the study that is cited suggests this. It's because of this reason. There's a change that happens to your blood vessels. So, when a change happens to your blood vessels, that means everything that your blood vessels serve changes, right? It explains why you can have multiple things go wrong at once. That happens sometime around age 50. Thinking of a friend of mine, he would say, "Well, Don, thanks for the great news." But really, David would encourage us to take note of that. I'm going to read from Psalm 39, just a few verses from Psalm 39, where David writes this: "O Lord, make me know my end, and what is the measure of my days? Let me know how fleeting I am. Behold, you have made my days a few handbreadths, and my lifetime is as nothing before you. Surely all mankind stands as a mere breath. Surely a man goes about as a shadow. Surely for nothing they are in turmoil. Man heaps up wealth and does not know who will gather. And now, O Lord, for what do I wait? My hope is in you." That's the key verse. "And now, O Lord, for what do I wait? My hope is in you." So back to Moses. His time as a leader wasn't ending only because he was 120 and only because he was no longer too able to go out and to come in. It was also because of this: "The Lord has said to me, You shall not go over this Jordan. Moses doesn't mention the reason here. He's mentioned it before, but he doesn't mention the reason that he is not going into the promised land. A couple times in Deuteronomy, even, he mentions that the reason that he is not going over. One of those was right after the time when Israel had defeated King Sihon and King Og, the ones that are in this passage. This is from earlier in Deuteronomy chapter 3. And here's what it says in verses 23 to 28. And I pleaded with the Lord at that time, that's the time when they just defeated these kings, saying, O Lord God, you have only begun to show your servant your greatness and your mighty hand, for what God is there in heaven or on earth who can do such works and mighty acts as yours? Please let me go over and see the good land beyond the Jordan, that good hill country and Lebanon. But the Lord was angry with me because of you and would not listen to me. And the Lord said to me, enough from you. Do not speak to me of this matter again. Go up to the top of Pisgah and lift up your eyes westward and northward and southward and eastward and look at it with your eyes. For you shall not go over this Jordan, but charge Joshua and encourage and strengthen him, for he shall go over at the head of this people, and he shall put them in possession of the land that you see. So it seems that Moses took that command of the Lord, don't talk to me about this again, seriously. And he seems to have accepted it because he just mentions it here. I can't go across the land. Doesn't mention why. Can't go across the Jordan. He's accepted the Lord's judgment. He's 120 years old. He can't go out and come in. And the Lord has told him, he can't go over the Jordan. So what does Moses do? Does he say, well, because these people haven't been great, does he say, well, they won't have me to kick around anymore? Does he say, I've been a leader for 40 years. When I'm gone, you'll see how good you had it. Does he say, good luck, you're on your own? He doesn't do any of those things. He does what a good leader should do. He humbly encourages the people, and he points them to the Lord. He says this, I'm not going over. The Lord your God himself will go over before you. So that's a way that they're just trying to emphasize the point that it's the Lord who is going over. Here's how you would read it, or here's how you would say it in translating it more literally from Hebrew. Yahweh your God, he is the one going over before you. The Lord is the one who will go out and come in before you. He's been doing it since he brought you out of Egypt. And even before, he was the one who brought you out with a strong hand and an outstretched arm. And Moses says, it's not about me. He reminds them of what he had been teaching them. He had already taught them this. This is from earlier in Deuteronomy also. He says this, Hear, O Israel, you are to cross over the Jordan today to go in to dispossess nations greater and mightier than you, cities great and fortified up to the heavens, a people great and tall, the sons of Anakim, whom you know and of whom you have heard it said, who can stand before the sons of Anak? Know therefore today that he who goes over before you as a consuming fire is the Lord your God. He will destroy them and subdue them before you, so you shall drive them out and make them perish quickly, as the Lord has promised you. It's not about me. It's not about me leading you. It's about this. It's about know, therefore, today, that he who goes over before you as a consuming fire is the Lord your God. Remember who he is. Remember what he does. Remember what he can do. And remember that he has promised you the land. He will destroy these nations before you, so you shall dispossess them. They would be tempted to be intimidated. They would be intimidated by greater and mightier people, by cities that were fortified up to the heavens, by people that were bigger than they were, that were taller than they were, that were stronger than they would. Who could stand against them? The Lord. He's the one who could stand against them, and Moses points them to him. And we should never forget that. When we face overwhelming odds, overwhelming enemies, spiritual battles, daunting troubles just in our regular life, failing health, being betrayed by family maybe, and in a crisis of leadership, in a change of leadership, at a crossroads in leadership, it's the Lord who goes before us. He's the one going before. And we should never forget that. You'd think we couldn't forget that, but we do. So quickly, when trouble hits, we forget. So quickly, almost so quickly at the first sign of trouble, we lose heart. We want to quit. We want to give up. And Moses points them to the Lord. So this morning, Pastor Randy explained that in 36 years now, he's been preaching here during the school years. Half of that time, 18 of those years, have been spent in the Gospels, and he said this. I think it might not be a direct quote, but it's pretty close. It's too late to change it now. Well, what was he doing? For those 18 years. Pointing us to Jesus. Nothing better you could have done. After Moses pointed the people to the Lord, the next thing he did was point them to the next human leader. Notice this. He will destroy these nations before you so that you shall dispossess them. And Joshua will go over at your head, as the Lord has spoken. Well, I'm not really sure. If you have a version different than ESV, it won't read quite like that. And I'm not really sure why the ESV translates it that way. Does anybody have a King James? King James Bible? Anybody have one? I'm gonna quote it because it's the most accurate translation that I found. Because it really says the same thing that it says about the Lord going before them. It says about Joshua going before them. And so here's how the King James uses or translates those two lines. This first line that says, "The Lord your God himself will go over before you," and the last one where it says, "And Joshua will go over at your head." Here's the way it would, here's pretty literal, King James. "The Lord your God," or "the Lord thy God, will go over before thee. Joshua, he shall go over before thee." Same thing. The Lord's going to go over before you. Joshua's going to go over before you. That's what it says. Making a point that, of course, that the Lord is preeminent here. It's him that matters. But Joshua is going to take over for what I was doing. And he'll go over too. Joshua will go over before you as the Lord has spoken. It shouldn't have been, and it wasn't a surprise who the next leader of Israel was going to be. Back in Deuteronomy 3:28, which was part of that passage that I read earlier, it says this, "But charge Joshua and encourage and strengthen him, for he shall go over at the head of this people, and he shall put them in possession of the land that you shall see." Joshua had been with Moses for a long time. He first shows up in the narrative in Exodus 17 when the Amalekites attack Israel. That's when Joshua first shows up. He's Moses' servant. He's Moses' attendant. He's already a trusted servant by that time, like right after they get across the Red Sea. Joshua is part of the story. He was chosen by God to be Moses' servants, to learn from Moses, to be his attendant, and ultimately to become the next leader of Israel. And Moses had an important role here. Moses had to train him up to be the leader. And when that time came for Moses to step down, he turns the people's attention to Joshua. He humbly points to Joshua, the Lord's chosen replacement. So this is an important thing for a leader to do. What Moses is doing here, Moses is a great leader. He's an example of other parts of this. Of the story of Moses are show this as well. But this is a great thing for a leader to do. It's an important thing for a leader to do. Many of you have supported and know that we have a short-term mission every year. I think for, I don't know how many years we've been doing it now, but for the fame of his name has been in existence for over 30 years. That's Calixto. You remember Calixto from Longview, Texas, who was born in Mexico and really started this mission movement with these churches with one church at the time, probably the one in Tamazunchale. And we're involved. We've been involved with Petlapishka and Tamazunchale and some of the other church plants. But Calixto, a few years ago, that group, by the way, was led by a pastor named Candido. And a few years ago, it was more than 5 years ago, less than 10 years ago, Calixto asked him, "Who's your Joshua?" And without hesitation, he answered him. Candido answered him. He said, "It's Enoch." Well, 2020 came along and COVID hit. Candido was in his 60s. He died. And Enoch is now leading those 13, I think it's up to 15 churches now that they've planted around the way. But it was important that people knew who that leader was going to be. Who's your Joshua? That's an important question and really a solid biblical leader. If you think about it, just even in the New Testament, Paul and Timothy. Paul trains Timothy. Let's go back. Jesus trains his disciples. He's got an inner circle. He's got Peter, the leader of the bunch, really. It's a great thing. It's a great, what Moses does, what Paul does, is show great love for the people by preparing the leader, the next leader. And thanks to Pastor Randy and his love for this church, we have in this church maybe a similar opportunity. I hope we do. Where Pastor Randy gets to spend some time with the next pastor here and bring him along into our culture. It's the loving thing to do. Changes in leadership are hard. There's no guarantee how it will go. We don't know how it will go in the short term, but we know how it will go in the long term. We should have no doubt how it will go eternally, because it is the Lord who is with us, and it is the Lord who goes before us. Psalm 33, verse 11, which was the last verse of our call to worship this morning. The counsel of the Lord stands forever. The plans of his heart from generation to generation. We know what his plans for the church are. And Joshua will go over as your head. Or Joshua, he will be the one that goes over, just as the Lord has spoken. And the Lord will do to them. These are the nations, the Canaanite nations, as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and their land when he destroyed them. So it's been quite a while since we read that account. It was early in Deuteronomy. But basically what they do to King Sihon and King Og, they refuse to let, at least Sihon refuses to let Israel pass through their land, and the Lord tells them to destroy him. Destroy everything. Destroy it all. And that's essentially what is coming up for what is commanded for the people of Israel to do as they enter the land. It seems uncomfortable to us. It's uncomfortable to us, but he reminds us this. The Lord reminds us of this in Deuteronomy. If you let them live among you, they will turn your hearts away from me. Don't make a covenant with them. Don't intermarry with them. They will turn you away from me. And so the Lord says, that's the bigger deal. Don't do that. Don't let that happen. And the Lord will do to them, the Lord's going to do it, as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and to their land when he destroyed them. The Lord will give them over to you, and you shall do to them according to the whole commandment that I have commanded you. They were entering the promised land, which had Canaanite wicked people in it. People whom the land was vomiting out. That's the way it's put in Leviticus. Vomiting them out because of their wickedness. But the nations were greater. They're more powerful. They're more numerous. They're better equipped than the people of Israel. But the Lord would go before them, and Israel would be going there with a new leader. And in that setting, he tells them this: be strong and courageous. I don't know about you, but when I think of those words or have thought of those words over the years, I tend to think about something that's something that I need to do. I need to muster that up in me. Be strong. Be courageous. Be a man. Don't be a wimp. Overcome. But Moses includes this part. Do not fear or be in dread of them. He acknowledges that there's a tendency for us to fear, and there's plenty to be afraid of. That's why he needs to say it. There's plenty to be worried about. There's plenty of uncertainty among the people. They don't know everything that's going to happen. There's plenty of things that make them lose heart, just like us. Plenty of things. Whenever, I don't know about you, but if I have a plan in my head, and if it doesn't go where I like it, I don't like that. It's uncertain. I like certainty. There are plenty of things to set us off course. But the solution isn't for us to just find a way in ourselves to build ourselves up to be able to handle it. That's not what it's about. It's about this. Recognizing, remembering, it is the Lord your God who goes with you. The Lord, the Almighty Lord, the Lord who can do anything. Your God, the Lord your God, your God, the God who is your Savior, the God who chose you, the God whose treasured possession you are, the God who never sleeps, the God who promises to be your guardian, the God who loves you, goes with you. That's what can make us strong and courageous. The Lord Moses reminds them that it is the Lord that goes with them. And notice this. He's already reminded them this. It's the Lord who goes before you. Remember back in verse 3, I think it was. The Lord who goes before you. Now it's the Lord who goes with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Four things. He's going ahead of you. He's going before you. He's going with you. Second one, he won't leave you. He won't forsake you. So we probably think of those last two, as about the same thing. Really, they're not about the same thing. It's because of the way that we use the word leave. We think that would mean something like abandon, which forsake would mean, to leave somebody behind. That's not really the meaning here. The meaning is he won't loosen his grip on you. Years ago, I like to tell old stories, I guess. My grandma, Ruth, who passed away almost 30 years ago. Not quite 30 years ago. Well, a little over 30 years ago, actually. But anyway, she would come over to our house, and we had this little dog, little Shih Tzu dog, about this big, you know, little thing. And he had a toy. And he would run it over to her. And she would grab a hold of it and just pull on it with him, and he'd growl at her and wouldn't let go of it and wouldn't let go of it and let go of it. And she would say this, leave loose. It's a term that we don't use anymore. Leave loose. Leave loose. That's what this means. The Lord won't leave loose of you. He won't leave you. He won't let you go. He won't let you out of his hand. That's what this means. The Lord won't let you out of his hand, and he won't abandon you. He won't forsake you. So if we can grasp that, who he is, that he goes before us, he goes with us, he won't let loose of us, he won't leave loose of us, and he won't abandon us, who can be against us? Next, we'll go to Moses' command to Joshua. We'll go through this pretty quickly. Then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him, in sight of all Israel, "Be strong and courageous, for you shall go with this people into the land that the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall put them in possession of it. It is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed." Then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the sight of Israel. Notice he makes sure that everybody knows. The whole congregation knows that Joshua is getting instructed here. Joshua knows that the people know that he's being instructed. In front of all Israel, he says this, "Be strong and courageous." And you notice this is almost the same thing that Moses says to the people. It's in a different order, but it's almost the same thing. "Be strong and courageous, for you shall go with this people into the land that the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them." So when Moses told the people, "Be strong and courageous," right after that, he says, "Don't be afraid, don't fear, don't fear." Here he doesn't do that. He tells Joshua first his commission, what he's supposed to do. I mean, we might think that's just because a leader's never supposed to show fear. I don't think that's quite it. What I think it is that the commission that he gives him as a leader is really important, and it's a really heavy thing to bear as a leader, and he's reminding him of his responsibility. "You shall go with this people into the land that the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them." I'm just going to make a point here. When Paul is listing all the things, all the hardships that he's had in his time, the shipwrecks and all of those things, do you remember how he concludes that section? Shipwrecked, beaten, spent a day and the night at the deep, or 3 days. He's been in danger from cold and exposure and et cetera, et cetera. And then he says this, "And apart from other things, there is the daily pressure on me of my anxiety for all the churches." That's the capstone that he gives of his sufferings. It's so hard. It's so hard to be that leader, and it's so important to be that leader. So I don't think it's just that the leader's not supposed to show fear. The leader is bearing a heavy responsibility. "And you shall put them in possession of it," really, "and you shall cause them to inherit the land." You shall cause them, you Joshua shall cause them to inherit it. Again, the Lord is doing this, but Joshua as the human leader is also doing this. The Lord he's really doing it. That's the way it's phrased. The Lord, Joshua will cause the people to inherit the land. It's a real thing. The leader has real responsibility. I know that this has been read. Pastor Randy refers to this once in a while. "Do not neglect the gift you have." So if you've been placed in any kind of position of spiritual leadership, just think about this. Paul is writing this to Timothy. "Do not neglect the gift you have, which was given you by prophecy when the council of elders laid their hands on you. Practice these things, immerse yourself in them, so that all may see your progress." And then this, "Keep a close watch on yourself and on the teaching. Persist in this, for in doing so, you will save both yourself and your hearers." You will save both yourself and your hearers. And then Moses gives the same four things that he told the people. The Lord goes before you. The Lord is with you. He will not let go of you. He will not leave loose of you. He will not abandon you. He will not forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. Instead, be strong and courageous. It is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Let's pray.